Blog Talk Radio.
It's Saturday night. It's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Saturday evening for April 16th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. We are coming to you live on PWTorchDailyCast.com on a Saturday night with Easter Sunday tomorrow night and lots of people traveling over the holidays. I figured let's get it in on Saturday night. Who knows? We may have some better luck with emails and calls here tonight than we would on Sunday night. By the way, airing right now as we are live here is Battle of the Belts 2 AEW show on TNT. I've got that on out of the corner of my eye here as we're recording, so we'll keep an eye on that as we talk here about AEW. That's our focus here tonight. We spent a lot of time over the last several weeks on WWE. It is WrestleMania season, so we had our WrestleMania preview show. We talked about WrestleMania. We talked about the fallout from WrestleMania. And we haven't spent a lot of time on AEW. So we're going to do that tonight. Obviously, if you want to talk WWE, you're welcome to call in 515-605-9345. Press 1 if you'd like to chat with us. And you can email us wnialivecast@gmail.com. We have one email in the queue. We're always looking for more if you have any questions. And joining me tonight is Javier Machado, PWTorch.com contributors. Javier, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Hey, Greg. Pleasure to be here. My third time, so I think I could officially graduate from guest co-host to occasional co-host, I think.
That's exactly right. That's exactly how the rankings work. Two more co-hosting on your punch card, and you get a free sub. So that's something to look forward to as well. As we're talking here, Javier, I know you cover AEW for PWTorch.com. We've got Battle of the Belts going on right now, and there are some happenings. You know, I just wrote down a list of things that have happened since we last talked in depth about AEW on this show, and we have the TNT Championship on the line to lead off Battle of the Belts to Scorpio Sky defending against Sammy Guevara. And one of the questions I had on my list was about Sammy Guevara. Since we really spoke about AEW last, he has teamed up with his real-life girlfriend, Ty Conti. He lost the TNT Championship, actually, in Fort Myers. I was there live for that episode of Dynamite to Scorpio Sky, who he's challenging here tonight. So Sammy and Ty have sort of gotten that Cody Rhodes brandy heat from live fans, and I'm watching Battle of the Belts too. Obviously, I don't have the volume on because I'm listening to you and to the callers who'll be calling in. So I've got it on mute. So I am kind of curious to go back and kind of listen to the crowd reaction here tonight for Sammy. But I mean, is it the booking of Sammy and Ty that has gotten the fans lukewarm to them? Is it just how they've carried themselves? Is it, you know, now that Cody and Brandy are gone, AEW fans need, you know, somebody to go against the grain with? Because AEW crowds have generally 99% of the time gone with AEW booking. There's not that rejection of baby faces or heels the way we see in WWE sometimes. So, you know, maybe this is that 1% that they always seem to keep active or something like that. So what has been the issue, do you think, with Sammy and Ty? Or is it maybe a combination of those?
I think it's their social media game bleeding into real life. Well, not real life, but AEW life. You know, there was this whole hoopla when, because remember that Sammy had proposed to his then girlfriend on TV, and then people, I believe on BT, he was, or his on the other stuff that he does, people were saying, oh, you know, him and Conti are together, and that became a whole thing, and then it was their reaction to that. I mean, I'm gonna play Switzerland in this case, and like whether I, you know, in that whole, you know, mess. But I think that and the way that they handled that pushback, I think created some resentment that filtered through some of the people, because he was getting, I mean, before it hit a critical mass, there were some people who were already booing them. And then I think that just picked up as the other people who were not like in this whole, I don't know what you would call it, this whole shipping culture, you know, because it was like the people were like into the shipping culture were the ones who kind of started this negative feeling. And I think, you know, the rest of the audience kind of picked up, and then it's kind of blown up from there. And the way that they've reacted also like online is like ever since that they made their thing official, it feels like they're obviously saying, you know, hey, look, we're so sexy, we're so hot, we're living our best lives in a you're not doing it kind of way.
Uh-huh.
So their social media game has been pretty heelish. So, you know, I think that that's what started, you know, this ball rolling. Hopefully they don't resist it. And, yeah, so I go with the heel stuff.
Well, and I can kind of give some perspective on this because it's just one person, but my girlfriend, you know, she'll sit down and watch wrestling with me occasionally. She attended the taping in Fort Myers with me, and she was a big Sammy Guevara fan. And you know, she saw the proposal and everything that he did to his, you know, then girlfriend at the time that was on TV. And, you know, she was a fan. And when she found out they had broken up and that now he, you know, pretty soon after, it seems, got together with Ty Conti, I mean, she was done with Sammy. Like, she unfollowed him on Instagram. She, you know, she can't, every time he's on screen, she just has to mention her disdain for him. And I think that's kind of like a microcosm of what the fan base at large kind of feels like, especially the women. And one of the stories of AEW's ratings over the last, really since its inception is the way that they've not drawn women viewers at the same or close to the same rate that WWE has. You know, there's some demographics that AEW has actually outdrawn WWE some weeks. But women, AEW has always really lagged behind on. And so that to me is a situation. And, you know, maybe through no fault of their own. They're just, you know, two people trying to find their way through life. But there is a certain way it comes across, especially to women, that does not make Sammy Guevara or Ty Conti the most likable people.
Yeah, and then there's the their reaction to it too. So it's almost like, you know, because these are two people who live their life on social media, and you know I think some of the pushback from like my point of view, my personal opinion is that, you know, you live your life, you know, open like this, you are going to get some, you know, cruddy people, you know, like, you know, say cruddy things, you know, and pushback. That's part of the bad coming with the good, and from what I see in social media, the response to it is almost like, we want the good and we want to be celebrated, but when we're criticism, whether it's fair or not, well, then you're the bad guy. And that's like, mm-hmm. that's where I think there's another aspect to that that also creates a pushback, because that's where part of my pushback was that, you know, like they're acting like entitled brats almost, and that kind of comes through a little bit on the stuff that they're doing. Now, if they embrace it, and put these, you know, you can embrace this and turn it into a constructive thing, and you know, and go with a heel run. And judging by the way that I see Guevara acting, as we're, you know, his facial reactions and the stuff that he's doing, he seems to me he's wrestling a lot more heelish. So I think that they might be embracing that.
And that was going to be my next question. Do you think AEW leans into it? Because, you know, whether it was Cody Rhodes, whether it was a Tony Khan decision, they never turned Cody heel. And he went on TV and would proclaim that he was never going to turn heel. And there was a real disconnect there between the fans and what they wanted and what Cody wanted to do. And I'm curious if you think AEW has learned anything from that, or if they try to go against the grain continuing moving forward with Sammy and Ty.
I don't think that Sam and Ty have the same sort of stroke backstage that Cody had. So I think that if they're on TV doing this stuff at this point, it's because they're heading in that direction.
One of the other things I want to hit on is last night was AEW Rampage, and in the main event, one of the biggest matches to date on Rampage, Hangman Adam Page defeating Adam Cole in a Texas Death Match to retain the AEW Championship. That obviously felt like a moment where Cole and Paige would part ways and move on from there. So the next pay-per-view that's coming up is Double or Nothing, just over a month away, May 29th from Las Vegas, and Adam Page is going to need a challenger for that. So who do you think ends up being Adam Page's challenger for Double or Nothing?
Everything feels like it's going to be CM Punk with what they're, you know, CM Punk is currently doing the beat a bunch of people to get his record up, except instead of doing it on Dark, he's actually doing it on TV, considering he's going to be wrestling Dustin Rhodes next. So it's going to be him. On Dynamite, there was that one spot that was kind of like a botch, and CM Punk sold it as a messed up knee, and he continued messing, you know, selling the knee. He's done that before in previous matches. I'm curious if the part of that is long-term storytelling, where he's going to start, you know, when eventually he gets a match with and gets a face-to-face with Hangman, he's going to be selling that knee, and then it'd be a trick, because I think that when they do have a confrontation, I don't think that CM Punk is going to full on heel, but I think he's going to be the heel in that relationship, where he's going to be a lot more prickly Punk. And you know, so that Hangman Page could be more of the babyface in that situation.
Do you think that'll work? Because, you know, there are some who argue Page's AEW title run has not been, you know, as well booked or well performed as it could be. And, you know, Punk is a legacy star. He's someone that people want to cheer. People, you know, when that music hits, it's an automatic pop. So is this playing with fire by AEW to have a babyface in Punk against a babyface in Adam Page when Page is sort of in a little bit of a tenuous situation? Or can they really make it work, and can they turn the crowd against Punk, even if just for the short-term feud with Page?
Well, yeah, I mean, my favorite thing about the whole Hammond Page run has been Eric Kroll on Twitter, his reactions. I think it is a little bit playing with fire if they push the heel, you know, if they push too far making CM Punk heel. I think Prickly Punk might work, but I think you're right, because I don't think that Hammond Page has the groundswell support that he had, you know, once upon a time. I think people still like him. He's still like up there, and you know. But I think when it comes down between him and Punk, I think Punk probably have a, you know, like a lion's share of the cheers, like a 75%. So I normally don't have a problem with face versus face matchups. One of the matches that made me a wrestling fan was the face versus face matchup of Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan. So I've always been partial to that of a face versus face matchup. But in this case, I think that it is a playing with fire situation. And, I mean, it'd be an interesting test where if it's a 50-50 situation, then Paige is doing better than, you know, my gut feeling. While, you know, but, you know, it, like you said, it is like a dangerous zone for Hangman Page.
This also feels like one of the first times where Adam Cole has defended his title and you really think there's a legitimate chance, that his opponent could end up winning the title. I mean, what do you think of the chances, presuming they do Punk versus Page at Double or Nothing, what are the chances that Punk does walk away as champion?
I don't know, because, I mean, I think it will do well for Page to actually be able to beat Punk. You know, I think that would be, like, the win that he would need to really notch, like, the top guy, considering the fact on how his run, and I don't think it's totally through any fault of his own through a lot of the booking, like you had mentioned, and not even booking of that specific storyline, but the booking of everything around it, where every storyline seems as important as, you know, as the title picture, which it shouldn't. Your title picture should always be the hottest thing. I do think that a victory over Punk would be a feather in his cap, and you could have it be like, you know, we'll meet again kind of situation. That would be my, you know, my feelings towards that, because I think if you give it to Punk, I think it'd be more along the lines of you know, of like, okay, we're going to move on to this guy instead of like giving the Hangman Page a proper send off. So, you know, Page, I think, has to have like a proper loss for it to really matter, for his title run, in my opinion, to matter.
What about Adam Cole? Where does he go from here? Does he go into sort of a trios division, even though they don't have the trios titles yet? It's always been rumored by AEW, but does he, you know, stick closer to Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly and do more work with them? Does, does he stay in the main event like picture, although not in the title picture? What do you see in the immediate future for Adam Cole?
You answered the question. I think that if they are going to launch a trios division relatively soon, I think that Adam Cole and Red Dragon would be your one of your top draws. I think Regal's group would be another trios group, which would be your two top trios groups.
Mm-hmm. Well, breaking AEW news as the first match has just concluded, and Sammy Guevara is your new TNT champion as he defeated Scorpio Sky after a Ty Conti distraction, a low blow, and then the finish. And now they're making out after the match. So, that's that's the
blow-by-blow. Yeah, you're 30 seconds ahead of me.
Oh, really?
the make-out session just started. That's what I wanted to say. Oh wow, he's bleeding. I don't think that was meant to. I think that was not meant to happen. With the low blow and how they're acting right now and stuff like that, that makes me feel that they're going, and you know, this extended mega session makes me think that they're heading into the definite heel scenario. Although, you know, it's just weird how Dan Lambert, when they were down here in Miami, got like literally booed out of the building. how he's like the face in the situation. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Find it an interesting, like as an aside, I find it interesting how someone who's been portrayed to be as violent, he even brings it up, I'm a sexist and yada, yada, yada. How someone is so vile will still side over him against other people just on basis of whether we like the other person or not. That's just, I find it hilarious.
All the more reason to turn Conti and Sammy Guevara, I think. So
yeah.
We move on to our next topic. Before we do, if you're joining a little late, welcome. This is Wrestling Night in America for April 16th, 2022. I am Greg Parks, PW Torch columnist, along with PWTorch.com contributor Javier Machado, and we are talking all things AEW here tonight. If you want to get in on the conversation, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. No wait, as we don't have anyone on hold. We do have some email to get to. But if you do want to call in and you're listening live, you're more than welcome to it as we continue to talk about some of the big happenings that have taken place on AEW lately. And one of the other things that happened and, again, was really borne out at the Dynamite episode that I attended live there in Fort Myers was the creation of the Jericho Appreciation Society. Chris Jericho, Daniel Garcia, the former 2.0, Jake Hager, all a part of that group. And I'm a big fan because I loved Jericho's promo the week or two after the formation of the group, where he declared themselves sports entertainers to Mega Heat, where Daniel Garcia, you know, he's now a reformed pro wrestler. He's a sports entertainer now. And, you know, taking someone like Garcia, who a lot of people had pegged as a member of William Regal's tribe there, the Blackpool Combat Club. And so, you know, to have Daniel Garcia, I mean, that's heat. When fans want him to be a part of this wrestling first group and you take him and sort of do a head fake and put him in the sports entertainer group. First of all, I think that's good for Daniel Garcia because it allows him to show some range. It allows him to work off of someone like Jericho, but also it gets heat for the group, you know, to see someone the caliber of Daniel Garcia as a wrestler now wanting to be referred to as a sports entertainer. So, and then you have, you know, the goons, Matt Martell and Angelo Parker and Matt Menard and Angelo Parker, which is just fantastic. And so I'm a huge fan of this group. Like I guess I've appreciated their promos more so than their in-ring work, but this has been a fun ride, and I'm kind of interested to see what Jericho has in store for everybody down the line to really cement their status as sports entertainers, that to show, you know, that's who they are, to get big heat.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more wait and see mode, but you know, it's not like it hasn't like sparked my imagination yet, so to speak. But you know, I'm enjoying this develop itself, basically.
Yeah.
And hey, right there you have, because I don't think it's all said and done for Daniel Garcia joining the Regals group, because there is time to, you know, for that to happen, because I think right now the idea is to have them be trios, you know, create these trios groups, because I think Garcia, Swagger, and Jericho could form the trios if Wade's listening to this, he's going to be upset with all the mentioning of trios. But that could be the trio segment. And I think there's still a possibility that they pull Daniel Garcia out of that group after whatever they do with the, in the trio thing. And then, I mean, that would be a fun, that group versus a Regals group what's the name of their War Games match? Blood and Guts. Having them in a Blood and Guts match, I think that would be of like the groups that exist currently in AEW. That probably the one that I can see most excitedly being involved in that.
It does feel like those two groups are destined to battle down the line. I mean, they're so on either side of the spectrum. You know, you have Jericho, who claim they're not pro wrestlers, they're sports entertainers, and you have the Blackpool Combat Club, who is going all in on being pro wrestlers and being what pro wrestling is all about. So it certainly does feel like at some point, maybe, you know, they're both pretty new groups, so it takes some time to get established, but it does feel like it's almost inevitable that those two groups will clash in a big way down the line.
Yeah, and sorry if I sound distracted, but I'm currently watching Carlton Castle and the Boys' Entrance. haven't seen Dalton Castle in quite a while, and a big fan of his. So, yeah, that was something. So sorry, Clayton.
Dalton Castle and Jonathan Gresham up next for Battle of the Belts, too. And since we're on the topic of the Blackpool Combat Club, let's talk about that. That's another group that has formed recently. And I think this was the hope, you know, when Moxley and Bryan Danielson first started teasing getting together, and Danielson had that promo where he talked about taking, you know, the really strong young wrestlers in AEW under their wing. And, you know, then at the last pay-per-view, Regal comes out, and then it all starts to click in people's minds. You're like, ah, yes, what better leader of this group than William Regal? And then you put Wheeler Yuta, and I'll just say, I think AEW has done a spectacular job of building Wheeler Yuta up and putting him not necessarily on the same footing as Moxley and Danielson, but on a footing such that people will take him seriously being a part of a group with Danielson and Moxley. So talk a little bit about the Blackpool Combat Club and then what AEW has done with Wheeler Yuta as of late.
Yeah, I mean, I figured that this was going to come up, so I had not watched Yuta's coming out party, his match. I hadn't watched it yet. I started watching that Rampage, and I only got about halfway through, so I finished it right before we came on. And yeah, that was a hell of a match. Good for forming the group, because I think that their priority is forming the group. If you wanted to really get Yuta and blow him up, I think I would have had him refuse them. And, you know, like, you know, if, you know, have them come to him. He goes, you know what, you know, F you, I'll do this myself. And then, like, go on a winning streak. And then join him, join them down the road, join with them down the road, you know, at more as an equal. And I think that would have been more of a better for Utah, you know, you know, in terms of, like, you know, him being stronger. Because, like, here he's coming, he's still going to be, he's still going to be considered kind of like their young boy. So, which is, you know, not necessarily a bad thing, but, and consider the fact that I think that, the idea is then being, you know, for whatever they're going to do with the Trios titles, when that comes across, I think that it would make sense that, you know, the way that they did it. But, yeah, that's so far it's been interesting, and I've liked it. You have Moxley, who's the, like, the total wild card, you know, and then Daniel Bryan, which is just, you know, the more you know, the more level-headed one, but would still kill you, so.
You know, I actually like the way they did it with Yuta, because I think if you have him decline, I think you run the risk of making the Blackpool Combat Club a little lame out of the gate when someone like Wheeler Yuta, who, you know, isn't exactly on their level, doesn't want to join with them. So, you know, that's, I think you're risking, even with Danielson and Moxley and Regal and the big names and the weight that they carry, I think you risk ruining the whole premise a little bit if the first person they want to recruit doesn't want to join them, at least initially. And so, you know, I like him wanting to be a part of it and wanting to prove that he belongs. I think that was a big part of what got him over in the first place is wanting to prove to these guys, hey, I belong with you. I belong in this group.
Yeah. If they could still, they could sell it as, you know, him saying, hey, look, I'm going to do more first. And, you know, and then they respect that, you know, and like, you know, this would be through a promo, obviously. And they say, yeah, we respect that, you know, and I think you still, but that would be if your long-term plans were to set this up. But since I think they're going to be moving to, you know, the next stage of them being a group, I think they move through it quicker, which, you know, overall is one of my, you know, one of the critiques I have of AEW is the fact that sometimes they'll move through the steps in the story really quick because they want to get to the next point and the stories don't have time to breathe. So, and you know, we're splitting hairs. I'm splitting hairs on this because it's like they did really well. I'm just saying that I think that, you know, to make it perfect, and, you know, and again, that also comes into taste would be, you know, that's how I would have, you know, done it. But, you know, again, that's splitting hairs. And again, it's one of those where this is basically supposed to all take place in a 15-minute segment. And then we're going to move on to our next 15-minute segment. You know, if the show were more about them, then I could see it, you know, my way.
Who do you think is next, if anybody, to join the Blackpool Combat Club? I think a lot of people like looking at the roster and trying to fantasy book who might join. I know there's people who say they should add a woman to the group as well. You know, Marina Shafir just debuting on AEW television, at least the main program, and she's a name that people have brought up as someone who fits what the Blackpool Combat Club is all about. So, I mean, do you see any other men or women on the roster who you think would really not only benefit from being part of this group, but would fit very well in this group?
I don't think there was an accent that Garcia was mentioned. I think there's still more to be played there. I agree with Tom Martin. Tom Martin had said that he'd rather the group stay smaller. Marina Shafir, she would be probably the one that would her or what's her name? Lila Hirsch would be the other one. The ones that kind of seem that they have more real fight cred, I think would be the ones that would be more likely. I'm not saying Serena Deeb just because she's already like her own thing. And she's a veteran. I think she'd be better off being used somewhere else. She doesn't need the rub from the group.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to think about it too. Is the idea that Danielson, Moxley, and Regal all kind of laid out at the outset was we want to take some of the younger men and women of AEW and train them, in, you know, to be the same vicious strikers that we are. So you're right, Deeb would, in a classical sense, fit what they're doing, but she wouldn't because, you know, she's already very well established in the grappling arts, so to speak. And so you'd be looking for younger, maybe less experienced folks. And really from an AEW booking perspective, you want those people to get the rub from being with Danielson and Moxley and Regal the way that Wheeler Yuta has gotten already. So let's go to the phones. Craig from Toledo is on. He's been listening in, and now he's calling in. So, Craig, thank you for being our caller tonight, our distinguished caller of the evening, at least the only one so far.
Our sole caller.
Hey, sometimes that's the way it is, you know?
Yeah, I know.
I've
listened since it was Wrestling Night in America with Pat McNeil, so.
That's right.
I know the routine here.
Exactly.
Just piggybacking on what you guys are talking about right there. I can't wait for Shooter to get in the Blackpool Combat Club.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that one.
I just can't wait until, like, because Moxley and Shooter, that was like the entire summer for me in like 2019.
I'm totally with you, man.
It was like, If Shingo is a junior heavyweight, then I'm a Doobie Brother. And he was just having the time of his life over there with Shooter, dragging him around. And
what
and
a
also,
payoff that would be.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't wait. And now that there's these rumors about New Japan versus AEW possibly having an event to get, like, AEW versus NJPW. You know, I just can't wait for that to happen if that happens. But on the women's side, I don't know what the contract status of Shayna Baszler is, because she would be like perfect.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I don't know what the contract status is. Obviously, she's got a very limited ceiling in WWE, unfortunately. You know, she showed what she could do in NXT, but in WWE, she, at least to those in charge, is missing the entertainment part of sports entertainment, it seems, that's kind of holding her back and sticking her in tag teams and things like that. So she would be interesting. Javier, you know, Baszler, is there anyone else from WWE that you could see at some point, if a contract expires and AEW picks them up, perhaps fitting in with that group?
Well, I mean, she fits in, but again, I think she's closer to Serena Deeb in terms of she already is a finished product, I think. So,
yeah.
I think that she's better off being used, almost doing like that, her own thing in that same vein, away from that group. You know, Marina Shafir's problem is that she's, I hate to hesitate to say green because she's been wrestling for a bit now, but she's, you know, missing a certain something, which is why Shafir works in that respect. Same thing with Leila Hirsch. Leila Hirsch is missing a certain something, and which is why I would make her work in that respect.
Yeah, back to you, Craig. Do you have anything else for us tonight?
Oh, I have tons, dude. Now that Scorpio lost, what do you think his ceiling is in AEW? Because, like, now that he's got that title off of him, he's got the snap thing, he's got the backing, he's got a lot of support from people that, especially now that ROH is involved. What do you think his ceiling is in AEW?
I almost see him being an ROH guy and moving over there, because if you think about what his latest run in AEW has been about, it's been about him either being undefeated for over a year or being TNT champion, and now he's neither. So, you know, what's behind his push? Where does he go from there on AEW TV? I don't know. So he, to me, would be a great candidate to be built back up via ROH. But the problem is we don't know what ROH's distribution is going to be. We don't know what kind of shows ROH is going to be running, where their shows would be airing, and when they do run shows. So it might be a while before ROH really gets started back up I don't know if I should even say full-time. So, Javier, what do you think about the future of Scorpio Sky now that he's no longer TNT champion?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think he's basically in AEW destined to be a gatekeeper. You know, this story, you know, him holding the title was basically just part of the Sammy Guevara storyline. It wasn't really, you know, part of his story. You know, so I think him and Ethan Page are just going to be gatekeepers for now. I don't really see them necessarily blowing up to, like, the next level. And, you know, if I think him or both of them going to being the, you know, ROH people fits the ROH brand. And, he could be a champion in that scenario. And then that gives him something to, you know, crow about when he comes back to AEW proper.
Jonathan Gresham just defeating Dalton Castle to retain the ROH world title here on Battle of the Belts 2. And now
you're so fast.
I have YouTube TV. I don't know. Maybe it's the reason. I don't know. But maybe I shouldn't say anything. Maybe I should wait to recap it in the next commercial so you guys can see it first. So I'm going to shut up and I'm going to go back to Craig. For any other follow-up for us tonight.
I was like, they're making out? What? Oh, yeah, they're making out. Okay, that's cool.
Are you on the Xfinity app? Because that's where I'm watching it. And I'm on
Sling.
When I co-hosted with Zach, I was like 5 minutes late. Cause I was almost like 5 minutes behind, and he thought I had stood him up. I'm like, no, apparently I was 5 minutes behind because of the feed.
As long as you don't ruin the Windy City, don't give no spoilers about Chicago tonight. No spoilers.
I'll try not to.
Greg, I know you, if it's on TV, then it's fair game. No, it's not on my TV right now. It's not fair game, Greg.
Well, and that's pay-per-view, too. That's pay-per-view, so, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of which, the sex appeal and the Sammy, Tay, and Carmella, Corey, like, stuff, does that still hold up? Like, it doesn't for me. Like, I don't really – I never really got into it back in the day, but I don't know how, like, modern, younger – I'm 43, so, like, does that hit with, like, wrestling fans now?
The only thing I can say is that the companies must think it does. I mean, that's why they're doing it. And they're probably doing it, you know, for different reasons. Corey and Carmella, at least it started off because of their YouTube show, and they wanted to get as many people to the YouTube show as possible, so they had to talk about it and they had to reference it. Sammy Tay Conti, I mean, it was just so front and center on social media that they almost had to address it and added a little more drama, at least, into the Sammy Guevara Scorpio Sky match. It allowed them to transition.
But the kissing is really over the top, though. That's what I'm talking about, Greg. Is like,
well, and I think that's what Javier was talking about earlier, is to get that seems like more of a transition to being heelish, and so that could be part of that. It's not necessarily designed to you know, appeal to a younger audience who thinks it's hot to see two beautiful people making out on television. It's just for Sammy and Tay Conti to get them heel heat for their potential impending heel turn.
Yeah, and in terms of whether, you know, it sells, have you spent any time on Rhea Ripley or Liv Morgan's timeline? And, yeah, people are definitely into that.
I guess. Yeah.
You know,
I only see that from Cameron Hawkins retweeting things. Like, that's the only sex appeal I get on my friggin' Twitter feed.
So, I mean, it all depends on, like, how it's presented, you know. So, you know, because the take on the Sammy's obviously at this point, you know, for heat or they have, like, or they really are unself-aware, one of the two. You know, and then a lot of the stuff that you see in mainstream WWE, which is not stuff that kind of, like, grew organically, it's just because that's, you know, it's done through the lens of Vince McMahon and the people who are, like, trying to, you know, feed what Vince McMahon is his version of it. Like, you know, which is where I think Carmella really, you know, Carmella falls under.
All right, Craig, anything else for us?
There's a ceiling. Yeah, just one thing. The Paige-Drew comparison. Is Hangman Adam Page and Drew McIntyre's title runs the same? I mean, that's what I think of when I think of the way that Hangman Adam Page, like, it's like Drew's title run without fans, but he actually has fans. If you notice, maybe Javier can correct me if I'm wrong. This is the first time he's drank beer since Moxley came back, his match the other day. Is his run Drew equivalent? And would it be best if he... I think he should have lost it the other day or yesterday, just because I think his comeback story would be great. But I want to know what you guys think, and I'll hang up and listen, and thanks for spending a Saturday night with me, guys.
Absolutely, Craig. Thanks for calling in and chatting with us here on a Saturday night. Maybe Drew, Paige's title reign, Drew adjacent, is how I would describe it. I think the one big difference to me is, if there's one complaint I can sort of get behind for Adam Page's title run, is it doesn't always feel like he is the top guy in AEW. And the part of that is AEW just has a really top-heavy roster. They have a lot of top guys, and Dynamite and Rampage are, by design, built around different top guys every week. You know, so they're not overexposing any one talent, certainly not overexposing Adam Hangman Page. But what that does is it makes your champion feel like part of an ensemble rather than the top guy on the brand. And I don't think there was any doubt for much of Drew McIntyre's run that he was the top guy on the brand. And, you know, again, part of that is Raw just didn't have a really strong main event scene at the time, which made it easier for a guy like, and I take nothing away from Drew McIntyre because he absolutely carried the ball well during that time. But to me, that is one of the bigger differences if you're comparing McIntyre's reign as champion on Raw to Adam Page's reign as AEW champion.
Well, with Drew McIntyre, I think Drew McIntyre has the ignominious claim to be probably one of the best WWE champions that we will never know exactly how people were actually responded, because of his entire tenure was during the lockout phase of everything. So, because I, you know, he was super well protected, you know, the people before the shutdowns happened, the people were like really, really hot for him. I think most of his run was good. I think what ended up ultimately hurting his run was his, seventh match with Randy Orton. And that one like went on forever. The fact that they didn't really give him people, and ultimately what I think killed the run. So, because when he lost it to Randy Orton, I think it was the Hell in a Cell, right? That's when you first started hearing, you know, rumblings of like, we're losing faith in Drew McIntyre, right? That's when I first, you know, in all the post shows and stuff, that's when I first start hearing the people talking about that. Then when he goes to recover it at WrestleMania against Bobby Lashley, when it was the first time they had crowds, that was the moment. That was the moment for him to be crowned in front of the an actual crowd. I don't think it would have been as momentous as him beating, you know, Lesnar in front of a crowd for his first title run, but it would have been a nice, like, make good for the crowd. I thought that was the moment. And when they pulled out of it at the last second, and from interviews that he's given, and he's always given him, when he talked about it, obviously he's a company man, but you can tell that it was like he knew that that was a mistake. And I, at the time, thought that that was a huge mistake. And I think that's what pretty much torpedoed Drew McIntyre from being, you know, your the 1B to Roman Reigns' 1A. I think that's what basically dropped him a notch to being just another, you know, WWE, you know, champion, you know, as opposed to being like one of the top guys for the company. So I think that's the Drew McIntyre story. The Hangman Page story is like what you said and what we said. He's just, you know, every show should start with him, you know, should start with him. Every show should start with him. If it's not him with a promo, if it's not him in an interview, if it's not, you know, it could be something as simple as, you know, watching him drive into the arena, and then like promoting, okay, the champion's going to talk, you know, at the top of the hour or at the end of the show, or he's going to say something, you know, having him involved in when it's, you know, throughout the show is how you show that this is, you know, this is someone that we need to pay attention to. Even if it's only 3 minutes here, 1 minute here, talk about your champion. You know, other wrestlers should be talking about the champion even when they're not doing that. It has to be the focus, and it's not. And like you said, it gives you the idea of it being an ensemble show, and at that point when all segments are given equal, you know, like equal treatment, if you have more excitement for CM Punk and MJF, guess what? It doesn't matter what the last match is, you know, on that night, if it's Adam Cole or Adam Page, and this is a Revolution, the thing that people are there to watch are CM Punk and MJF, because that was the hottest storyline. So it did him basically no favors the way that, you know, how they've booked this, because they haven't really pushed him as they should, like your top guy. You know, the same thing with the tag team belts, because the tag team belts, you know, are Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. And it also feels like they're not where they were when you had them on the Young Bucks, and when Young Bucks and Omega had the championships, they were all, you know, not all over the show, but there were more than one segment of the shows.
Yeah, really good analysis there. I agree with most of those points. I mean, if Hangman Adam Page is going to be a cowboy, heck, show him on a farm. Show him working with his hands. Worked for Terry Funk.
Yeah. Yeah,
even if he's not in the arena, show him in a video package, something.
Yeah, I mean, get someone to build an electric tractor for him, you know, driving around a Tesla tractor or something, you know. I mean, just you know, I mean that builds more of that character, and yeah, I mean, and Craig mentioned, you know, he talked about him grabbing a beer when they were fighting on the audience, and that was, I think, like one of the coolest spontaneous moments. Don't know if it's spontaneous because the beer was closed, and I think that might have been planted. But if it was, you know, that hey, you know, great to go there. You know what I mean? Great to let him show some of that personality.
Thunder Rosa, Nyla Rose, now up here on Battle of the Belts 2, as we are here on Wrestling Night in America talking AEW. The next story I want to talk about here tonight: MJF and Wardlow. So this has kind of progressed the way that a lot of people expected, with the turn, Wardlow laying bare his story on Dynamite, MJF sort of getting rid of him in the last few weeks, Wardlow exploding into the arena, beating up security, getting bigger and bigger pops every week. How long can AEW continue to have Wardlow break into the arena and beat up security and cost MJF matches before they have to take the next step? And what do you think that next step is? I've heard a lot of people, you know, say that MJF is just going to fire Wardlow and make him sit at home for 90 days, which is kind of a play on what WWE does. It doesn't really – and how do you get around, you know, explaining why AEW just wouldn't sign Wardlow and to save him all this grief? So there is somewhat of a sticking point, somewhat of a hole, it seems like, in that part of the story. But – how do you think they've handled Wardlow since his babyface turn?
Well, I think they've already turned the page of him costing the pinnacle members who have not turned face costume of the match, because he's going to be wrestling the Butcher next week, and I think it's the start of the next phase, which will be the Trials of Jericho Part 3. You know, he's going to make him go through everybody. And you know what? At this point, he's done it three times. He did it with what, Cody? He did it with Cody, right?
Oh, boy. Maybe?
Yeah, because then it was Cody, then he did Jericho, and now he's doing with Wardlow. Love that gimmick. You know, and it's a thing now. So it's going to be interesting going forward. But, yeah, I think Wardlow's going through the trials of Wardlow up next. I think that's the next step in the way, on the way to Double or Nothing. In terms of like the law question, that's something better for Todd Marsh to answer. But I think the whole idea is the fact that since he is under contract to MJF, he can't also be under contract to AEW. So the contract situation has to play out, because I mean he's basically, I think that was the whole thing, is that you're going to sit out the rest of the contract, like poor Mustafa Ali. They're making him sit out the rest of his contract. And I think that's the idea. What was his idea? But because he kept, you know, showing up, he's like, okay, well, then I get to book the matches. They did mention that he has booking authority over Wardlow. And I think the thing is, at some point, you know, Wardlow's going to say, hey, yeah, you know, I'm no longer under you. And then like the moment is got to be where it'll show on the screen. Wardlow is all elite. That's got to be. You know, I mean, that's got to be what they do. And at that moment, you know, the crowd's just going to go nuts. He's going to finally get his hands on MJF, beat him up a bit, and then MJF, you know, scurries away from through the crowd or something like that. So I think that's what's going to be like the final step of the storyline, you know, before they get their match.
Do you have Wardlow versus MJF penciled in for Double or Nothing in May?
Yeah.
Perhaps written in pen. Instead of penciled in.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, in Maine, because of the fact they're going to make him go through the trials of trials of Wardlow, you could take up, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks with that, and then, you know, what, you know, spend the rest of the time just building up the direct confrontation between the two.
Moving on now to the ROH AEW situation. Talked a little bit about that earlier when we talked about Scorpio Sky, but. You know, Tony Khan has a lot on his plate already and now wanting to take over ROH. And I couldn't help but notice when he did the post-ROH scrum, the media scrum after their last pay-per-view, he didn't really have a lot of answers. And, you know, it's kind of strange that you would buy a company and intend to keep it moving without having much of a plan in place and kind of, you know, ROH may be shelved for 6 months while they look for outlets to air it on and what the case may be. So it looked like, based on the results of the ROH pay-per-view that Tony Khan booked on April 1st, that it's going to have a pretty heavy AEW presence, because a lot of the titles that changed hands went into the hands of AEW talent. So what do you think about Tony Khan's decision to buy ROH and his intention to book it, in addition to all of his duties with AEW, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the soccer team, and things like that, and the future of ROH just in general, without really having an outlet to show it on, without really having an idea of where an outlet is going to come from?
Yeah, I mean, my gut feeling is that ROH is going to be their version of NXT, essentially. Well, they'll have, you know, some of the stars to like anchor the show and then use it to develop other people. That's my gut feeling of how they're going to use that as a developmental, but like the next step up from the next step up before, plus also give people something to do when they're not on the main shows, as like a third show, you know, particularly the veterans, so that they can, you know, bring in other people, which is what I thought when they were doing the whole open door thing, what they were going to be using Impact for. And they did a little bit where they sent, you know, they were going to send Sam Guevara and there was a little bit of that, but I don't think that ever hit to the level that I was hoping for and expecting. I think that's my gut feeling on how they're going to use ROH. In terms of, you know, one of the rumors, because Tony Khan has an announcement. One of the rumors is that it might be, ROH, you know, where you could watch ROH. There's been, you know, among other things, I don't know if we're going to talk about later, but that's one of the rumors, that what they're going to do with ROH next. And I think just give the belts right now to the AEW talent, just because you don't know who you're going to re-sign. And from my understanding from the ROH point of view, and this is, again, rumors I've read from, like, little tidbits here and there on Twitter, that I think it was unexpected. So it was one of those things where ROH was expecting to come back doing their own thing, but then they decided, you know, either Tony Khan made it too good of a deal, or they're like, you know what, I think it's a safer bet if we just, you know, sold this to Tony Khan and just decided to go that way and then cut their losses there. And it kind of feels like that is a possibility, because I'm catching up on Impact Wrestling, and I'm to the point in Impact Wrestling where you have the Honor No More invasion, which and Gresham has been showing up and stuff like that, and that kind of feels like that was supposed to lead into something, and I think that, you know, the Tony Khan thing was not, and considering the fact that he made that announcement before the ink was even dry, and he had a backup announcement just in case the deal didn't go through, you know, that tells you how much short notice this was done in.
There's been talk because of the ROH purchase, including the ROH tape library, that AEW may want to start up its own streaming service. Do you think that's a possibility, and do you think ROH could end up there?
Well, I mean, they're owned by Warner, and don't they have the whole HBO Max thing?
Yes.
So, you know, just getting themselves a channel on there, a sub-channel or whatever you call it, and having the ROH library makes it more
sort of like what
attractive.
WWE has with Peacock.
Yes, yeah. So, and having that there would be more attractive, so that's a strong, you know, that, because of the rumors I've heard, is a streaming deal, and hey, you know, if they do get a streaming deal, the ROH could be first run content on the show. On the streaming, side of things. So, yeah. You know, that could be one, that's, you know, rumored to be one of them. Hopefully we talk about the other one, the other rumor, which apparently is the hottest one right now.
Go ahead. Talk. I don't know what you're referring to necessarily.
The rumor right now is New Japan AEW Super Show.
Okay.
Which was reported by, I wrote it down because I wanted, Super J-Cast basically said that's penciled in for, I think, end of June, I think, which would be interesting. Although I don't want to get people's hopes up, because even if it does happen, the last time New Japan did one of these type of shows, which was, I think, I want to say it was Noah. Yeah, right? Noah, on the third night of Wrestle Kingdom. It was basically all tag team matches. So don't expect to have like one-on-one, matches, and expect to see factions wrestle each other, which is still cool, but don't expect it to be like, you know, basically what they did with ROH, the ROH and New Japan Super Show, where you actually had, you know, one-on-one, you know, dream matches. I would think this would probably be more a bunch of tag team matches. Might have like one or two dream matches, but not.
If you're AEW, you want to be careful, because who came out of that show looking a lot better? It wasn't ROH, it was New Japan. So I know New Japan isn't exactly a hot product right now for a lot of reasons, but history should be your guide there if you're AEW. We have Keith Lee in AEW now. And I think we've seen enough of him to where we can kind of talk definitively about what he's brought to the table so far. And I know that Wade Keller was pretty critical of him, at least early on, in terms of not really having his cardio up to standard, even in the shorter matches that he was wrestling. But how do you think they've used Keith Lee so far? He's been dealing with Taz's group and Powerhouse Hobbs. And how do you think he's looked in the ring after, you know, a bit of a layoff?
Well, considering this answer is going to be pretty damning, considering the fact that I haven't really been following Keith Lee because most of the stuff has been happening on Rampage, which I'm actually behind on. So that's a pretty damning thing, you know, in terms of, like, if you thought that he was going to be, you know, doing some hot stuff. I think most of what I've seen from him was because several people retweeted this, which was when Swerve used his chest for a moonsault or something. So, yeah, it's been, you know, I did see him lose to Powerhouse Hobbs because they cheated and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, he hasn't made an impact because he hasn't been, you know, on the top show. So, you know, that's pretty much, and it's not like, and when they've done the promos, you know, that they do on the main show to promote Rampage, it hasn't really stood out to me there either. So, I mean, that's pretty much fairly, you know, that's more on AEW's side of how they're using them, but, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't expect AEW to launch every former WWE wrestler into the stratosphere immediately upon debut. It's not possible. You know, and AEW already, we talked about this earlier, has a really top-heavy roster. They have a lot of people to rotate in and out of the main event. So, you know, for people like Andrade and Aleister Black and Keith Lee, people who've come over from WWE and, you know, the WWE acolytes are looking at, see, they're not any better off in AEW than they were in WWE. And it's like, well, you know, you can't have everybody show up. This can't be Impact Wrestling from a decade ago where you'd take, you know, the mid-cardiest mid-card in WWE or someone who wrestled on Nitro once and put them into the main event situation and expect your company to flourish. So I don't mind that they've taken it slow with him. I haven't minded his work as much as some others, and I know others have been critical of his in-ring work so far in AEW as well. But, you know, I'm okay with the way they're taking it. I think that at some point he will get an opportunity higher up the card, maybe TNT title. There's nothing wrong with that. Everybody can't be in the main events. Everybody can't hold the AEW championship, and that's okay. You know, it's a meritocracy. You got to earn it. So that's fine. So, I guess, you know, he has done a lot on Rampage. We have seen AEW keep some wrestlers on Rampage, and almost – it's not a brand split, certainly, but there have been wrestlers that they've used more on Rampage than they have on Dynamite. In fact, tonight during Battle of the Belts, they advertised that Hook was going to be debuting on Dynamite. Hook has been a Rampage wrestler. I mean, that's an attraction. Tune into Rampage, the only place you can see Hook. So I think having a Hook – pardon my pun – but having a Hook for a show like Rampage, like Hook – or Keith Lee, where you can really only see them on Rampage or see them often if you like them, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I think that spot's going to Swerve maybe now, because I think Swerve is beginning a lot of play in Rampage. So
yeah.
I like that. I actually like that because you're giving somebody the chance to anchor a show, you know, and see what they can do with that and then move them on to let me turn off Bird. What is it, Birds of Prey now? Let me turn off the TV. I haven't seen it yet. I'm not in the plan of seeing it, but you know, it's drawing my attention away. I was thinking we were not talking about Keith Lee, right? Having someone who anchors the show would be, I like the way they're doing it. And it's acting like not necessarily a stepping stone between the dark shows and the main show, but as a showcase where you could put, like, another story line off to the side that's not really important but might still be interesting enough for you to follow.
I'm not sure this Battle of the Belts watch-along was much of a success here tonight, Javier. I got to be honest with you.
No. I don't know what to say about that. That was.
It's gotten us more distracted than anything else, I think.
Yeah, seriously. You know, Dalton Castle. Speaking of distracted, I just want to rant on something because it was on the background. And there may be a slight chance that Tony Khan listens to this. There's nothing more I hate than the cutaway cam to people reacting to something that just happened, because you're taking away from the moment in the ring. You know, trust that what you just booked, just trust that whatever move just happened, trust that what just happened is hitting our emotions the right way. You don't have to show us somebody else having the emotion that you want us to have, so that we can, you know, feel it through them. Be confident in what you did, because cutting away to the people mid-match is probably the thing I hate the most about wrestling, you know, in terms of the camera work. It's just, almost as much as the rapid cuts that WWE does. So, yeah, I just stop cutting to the audience members.
I don't hate it as much as you do. In fact, I think it can be beneficial at times. Not so much to say this is how you should feeling, you should be feeling, but to see someone else sharing in the emotion that you're feeling too. And so I think that's a connection that fans can make with each other. I think the problem is there's only like a split second of time where it really works, because a lot of times, you know, you got to focus on the selling of the wrestlers to put over the move. Sometimes they'll cut to that expression and cut away so quickly you barely even saw what that fan was expressing, because the director doesn't want to miss anything in the ring. WWE has done it to the point where they do it at inopportune times, like someone in the middle of hitting a move or in the middle of a pin. So you have to time it like just right and hold it just long enough and to really be effective, in my opinion. And that's a very thin line to walk. And so I do appreciate it, because I think it's cool to see people getting lost in pro wrestling, because sometimes we can be so cynical about what we're watching and we can pick it apart. And especially when you're watching at home and you don't have that community viewing experience with the people in an arena, be that moment washing over you, the music, the match, the sound of the ring from in the arena, it can be kind of, when you're watching at home, it can be just kind of, it's very, what's the word I want to use? It's just kind of, I don't know. It's not, you're not feeling it as much. So to see people in the arena really being lost in pro wrestling, and that's, those emotions are what really got us into pro wrestling in the first place, is feeling those emotions, whether it was watching on television or being in the arena. So I kind of like seeing people who are just really experiencing it and really feeling what's going on in the match. And so I think it can be beneficial, but I understand, Javier, what you're saying.
Well, everything you say, I apply it to the wrestler, which is why I like close-ups when, like, they're selling and they're on the floor, and I want to feel their exhaustion. I want to see, like, you know, and I think what brings me most into New Japan is their camera work, because it'll zoom in on Okada's face, and he's got, like, this glassy-eyed look and, like, this faraway look, and you're already exhausted. It's been a 45-minute match, and you're watching the glassy-eyed, exhausted look on his face. And I'm feeling that exhaustion along with him.
Yeah.
So I understand what you're saying, and I like it when it's like, there are moments, very few moments, that you can do it at, when it's like, you know. But I think they
Lesnar beating
far.
Undertaker at WrestleMania was one of them.
Yeah, that was a moment. But here's the problem: that moment has made it so everybody wants to be on camera doing that phase. Or something to that effect. And you could tell, you could see some people in the audience are just holding a pose, hoping that they get caught, you know,
because
they're doing like a ridiculous look, which is obviously over the top, because they're obviously trying to get themselves on TV, you know.
Yeah.
Although the best cutaway, with all that said about the cutaway, the best cutaway was the cutaway to the Jim Ross cosplayer on Dynamite the other day.
I saw that on Twitter, and Jay was like, wait a minute. His reaction made it. I mean, like, that was worth sitting through Grumpy JR for, like, hours to get that reaction to him seeing that guy.
It was it was the whole setup to that, because, you know, normally they'll cut to a reaction to the person in the audience, you know, they'll cut away. Because like you mentioned, there's like they spend a certain amount of time. They lingered on this guy, and JR was like talking, and then he's like, wait a minute. It was like perfect timing. Well, probably my happiest moment of the week.
Excellent. I think that one we can agree on for sure. Couple more things on AEW to talk about, then we'll get to our email and then wrap things up here for tonight. Britt Baker, we haven't really seen her since she lost to Thunder Rosa, lost the title. Dynamite's going to be in Pittsburgh again soon. That's the expected return of Britt Baker. What do you expect when Britt Baker's back on TV? Is she destined for a babyface run sooner rather than later?
Well, I mean, either she comes back as a heel and calls out, oh, my God, are we past nine? Oh, no, yeah, it's still early. I don't know why my brain is gone. Thunder Rosa, she calls out Thunder Rosa, and she stays a heel, or, you know, and they revisit that, or she comes out and calls out Jade Cargill as a face.
Yeah. Do you think it's time she turns babyface? Has she done all she can? Has she wrestled everybody she can as a heel?
I don't know. I think they might end up keeping her. I mean, there's been a lot of – the problem is there's been a lot of – because I just found out today that apparently Red Velvet turned heel.
She was in the audience with Jade Cargill's club there.
Yeah, I mean that was the first thing that popped to mind. But then she in her match with Willow, I believe it was when like you know the Taz was like, oh she has a new attitude. I'm like, oh she apparently turned heel, and it wasn't like very obvious. but yeah, I mean I don't know. I mean I don't know. I don't know about Britt Baker, to be honest with you, because I think you may want to push Tony. If you're going to push Tony Storm hard as a babyface, I think that you're better off leaving Britt as a heel, because I think it depends on what they're doing with Tony Storm. I think that really is what it boils down to. Because I think Tony Storm is the best candidate to dethrone Jade. But it really depends on their plans with that. Because if they're not pushing, if Toni Storm is going to be more of a Ruby Riott, then I think then you do Britt Baker as a babyface. But if it's going to be more, if you're going to push her hard, I think you kind of need to keep Britt heel, based on like the wrestlers they have out there right now.
And finally, the tag team champions, Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, they have seem to have a tenuous hold on the title since they won them. So, you know, we see FTR getting a lot of plaudits for their match against the Briscoes at the ROH pay-per-view, feuding with the Young Bucks, having a great TV match with the Young Bucks. Does it feel like JB and Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, it feels like they're taking kind of a little bit of a backseat. Are they very long for being champions, or are they going to lose the titles here soon, do you think?
If they lose to anybody, I think it's going to be FTR. It looks like they're doing FTR and Red Dragon for the ROH titles, likely. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, I mean, I think they keep them and for the time being, and maybe drop it to either the Bucks or something, someone that maybe FTR can. I could even maybe drop it to the Bucks so that then FTR and the Bucks happen yet again one more time.
Mm-hmm. Is there a risk by putting, you know, Red Dragon against FTR for the ROH titles? Is there a risk of, you know, Tony Khan putting interest in the ROH tag titles against interest in the AEW tag titles? Because to me, FTR versus Red Dragon is a hotter potential matchup than anything Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus are doing. Or is that not part of the calculus, you think, for Tony Khan?
I you know, because talking to Zach, you know, because there's the question of, you know, because when the Bucks wrestled, the FTR was like, you know, determine who the best tag team is in the world, and well, you know, you don't have the titles was the question. I'm like, well, you know, there's some years where the best team that year didn't win the Super Bowl. because it was the team that got hot there at the end. You know, sometimes that happens. And I think that's kind of where we're kind of at, where I think FTR right now is the strongest name. I think the ROH title probably is, you know, got more equity built into it than the tag team titles right now. And you want to, like, maybe fix that as soon as possible and make it so that everything is correct and probably put the titles onto FTR. And do so in a way that doesn't hurt Jurassic Express. Because, like, if this were the WWE, I could totally see them just, you know, throw a match together on Dynamite and just have them lose and then get and put the belts on Dynamite. A decision like that is, like, basically, you know, the Saudi show where The Fiend beat Seth Rollins for the championship. It was because they would just listen to the fans and just, oh, well, you know, just move on to it real quick, and it ended up hurting the person who's losing. So I think they need to build into something where FTR either beats legitimately or another team beats Jurassic Express legitimately, and then you set up a feud to get FTR. Because, I mean, right now I think if you pull anybody, I think, you know, you'll likely get best tag team. Right now you probably hear FTR and Proud and Powerful as most people are going to say one of those two teams.
And we'll finish up with an email here tonight, and this is on the topic of AEW. This is from Dan from Leeds in the UK. He says, "Evening, Greg and guest host. The closing moments of AEW Dynamite perfectly encapsulated my current concerns with AEW. AEW has assembled one of the deepest and strongest rosters in wrestling history through the focus, though the focus on the show continues to broaden to the detriment of the overall product. Firstly, Joe versus Suzuki was excellent, so no criticism with the match itself. My concern lies with the focus on the ROH TV title in a main event segment. I have little connection to ROH and haven't been given enough background on AEW programming to invest in an ROH secondary title. Dynamite then closed with yet another lights out, followed by an underwhelming reveal. First week of a new character, so trying not to be too reactionary, but I was instantly in mind of Omos, the Great Khali, and more historically, the Giant Gonzalez. This reminded me of the very worst of WWE's propensity to book turning heads at the airport style body types and is the sort of booking I'm trying to escape when tuning into AEW. I consider AEW my home team and I'm willing them to succeed long term, but I have concerns with the current undefined approach. Thanks for the content, analysis, and company during home working. Keep up the stellar work. Cheers, Dan from Leeds." Thank you, Dan, for the email. And if you want to get in on this, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We empty the mailbag each and every weekend here on Wrestling Night in America. So I will stipulate that since Dynamite, Tony Khan has conceded that if it was up to him and he had it over again to do, he would not have done the lights out gimmick. That seems to be kind of secondary to the complaint. Anytime you're compared to Giant Gonzalez, that's not a good thing. So, you know, this guy that was brought out by Sanjay Dutt and Jay Lethal to attack Samoa Joe at the end of Dynamite, that was kind of a dud. And those are few and far between, I think, for AEW in terms of how they end shows. So is it enough to give them a pass? I guess that your mileage may vary on that. But a couple things here that I want to bring up that Dan brought up. And first, Javier, is if you are AEW, how much do you really champion Ring of Honor? How far do you go to explain to your audience who, like Dan, may not know all that much about Ring of Honor, and now all of a sudden there's these ROH titles, there's these, you know, Dalton Castle and Jonathan Gresham on Battle of the Belts tonight. You know, how much work do you really put in, and what's the return on investment there if you're AEW championing ROH on your own television show? And then, you know, the question of, is it worth having somebody? And this is, a lot of people have surmised that this is Tony Khan's answer to Jinder Mahal in a way, where WWE put the title on Jinder Mahal to try to bring the Indian market in, because there's such fertile land there to mine if you're WWE and wanting to you know, get as much out of that part of the world as you can in terms of interest and eyeballs and money. And, you know, this seems to be AEW's version of doing that. So what's your take on the ROH part of it and how Dynamite ended this past week?
Yeah, I was glad we were going to get to this, because you hadn't brought up the that part. Like, I know Greg's not, you know, not forgetting this. This apparently was one of the biggest stories of the week. Yeah, I mean, okay, so to tackle the question of the RH title and stuff like that, AEW's definitely positioned itself to be a company, you know, like we exist outside of, you know, there's wrestling outside of us. We just happen to be the best. It's in the name, All Elite. If, you know, so they admit other companies appear. Now, you may not know ROH, and this is, you know, everybody's mileage may vary, but this is how I personally approach it. Is you may not know ROH, you may not have familiar with the history of ROH. I know ROH a little because I saw it in little bits and pieces, but it's not like I was an ROH guy. I saw it early on, and then I saw it during the Bullet Club era, and then that's it. I don't have like that in depth history of like the Samoa Joe era and stuff like that, and CM Punk and all that stuff. So you know, so I do have, you know, but you do understand the concept of a title, of a belt. You know, you understand that that's what they're fighting for. Now, someone who's into ROH and knows the history of the title is obviously going to get more because they're invested, they have that investment. But you might be coming in and seeing Samoa Joe in there because this was Samoa Joe's second appearance, right? Because he appeared in the ROH show, and then it was this match, right? So
yeah,
you have Samoa Joe. So you're drawing in on the people who know about him outside of that, whether it's Impact, which is where I primarily knew him from, NXT, which is where, you know, or ROH and where he's been from, or, you know, so you have that. Then you have Minoru Suzuki, where if you follow New Japan, you know, so like if you don't follow New Japan, then you may not know, although he did have some appearances and and if you've been following AEW, you know that he was a hot thing because people were really into him and the stuff that he did on his AEW appearances. So, yeah, in this particular case, you are drawing from a lot of different places. But if you are an NXT fan, you know Samoa Joe, you're into it for Samoa Joe. If you're into it for, you know, if you're a New Japan fan, you're into it for Minoru Suzuki. If you're an RH fan, you're into it for the title. There was very little in that AEW. Now, I'm someone who was into all those aspects, so I was hyper-focused in. This was a match for, like, someone who hit all four cylinders. Now, yes, that means that some people are not going to get hit by if you're not getting hit by any of the four, then, yeah, that kind of blows, but you still got a good match out of it. You know what I mean? It was still a good match.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think, you know, and in some cases, particularly when, you know, when I hear, you know, other, I refer to myself as an analyst because I don't like putting myself on the same pedestal as you and Wei and all stuff. So, but when I'm, you know, when you're talking about like, well, you know, some people might not know the history of the ROH, but you might know everything else that's, you know, going into the match. Don't be worried about the fear of missing out. Somebody's missing out because they don't know about the ROH title. You still got a good match out of it. You are enhanced, but you know you're going to get a good match. And I think that overall, when you look at what Tony Khan's done with his booking, is that he's trying to book a good match every single time, even sometimes when that's not the right answer. You know what I mean? That just giving you the best match because, you know, it's taking away from another match because you're doing crazy stuff in an earlier match that you should have saved for the main event, which has been a criticism. He wants every match to be the best match that could be booked at this position. So that's, I think, at the core of what Tony Khan does, is booking the best match for this position. So if you have that kind of faith, and you might not know that, and he might put two people you don't know, and yeah, you're missing out on that, but you should at least have the faith, if you have a faith in what he in his booking, that you're at least going to get a good match out of it. And who knows, maybe you really get into one of these characters and you're like, man, you know, I know this Joe guy, but let me look online. What else has he done? And then you learn more about that character. That's how I did New Japan, because I didn't get into New Japan until AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura showed up in WWE. And I'm like, well, they had a match in New Japan. Let me go watch that match. And then I watched that Wrestle Kingdom, which I think I forgot what number it was, but I watched that Wrestle Kingdom. And I was like, wow, this was really good. And then the next Wrestle Kingdom was right around the corner. And then that's when I started watching it. And then from there, I researched it and I saw, you know, the important matches that happened beforehand. And I fell in love with New Japan. So, I mean, you know, just look at it as an opportunity. If it interests you, you know, look, you know, go and, you know, check out, you know, if you find a way. I don't know how the stream service works or how good it is, but you know, you could find on YouTube and read about it and learn about it.
And yeah, I think those are all good points. You know, especially when you take into account that Tony Khan owns ROH, so it's in the company's best interest to put ROH on a pedestal for whatever they're going to use it for moving forward, whatever it's going to be on or whatever, you know, this is, ROH is going to benefit AEW in some form or fashion. So it's best to start conditioning fans that this is a product and these are titles that you need to care about. And then, Javier, the end of the show with the lights out and everything like that.
Yeah. Part two to that was, that would be my one, like, concern is this was a business decision in terms of the India market, from what he had said. And I think that is a bigger, and to kind of please the new masters is, for the people not in the know of this, Warner Media and Discovery merged. So there's basically new leadership on that side of things. So that was more of a business decision, not just to get your foot in the door in India, but also it's different from the WWE, because WWE wanted to get their foot in India specifically so they, like you said, mine the Indian market. This has another thing that they also need to show their new masters that they're worth it too. So it's not just getting into the media. You know, there's a reason why they want to get into the media, the India space, is because they also have to, like, let the new people, you know, in charge know. Because if you look back at the WCW, it was a change in upper management when Turner was no longer in control, which was led to, you know, the new people in charge looked at it and they said, "What is this?" And that was what pretty much, you know, one of the, you know, they weren't interested in running wrestling. So, you know, they need to, you know, I think that part of this decision was driven by the need to prove themselves to the new Warner Media that they, you know, that they're singing for their supper, so to speak. I think that was a big reason for that. The problem is that, you know, that went contrary to, how, you know, like, to the fans. It worked. It was a business decision for business and not for the fans. And I think that because they've been so fixated on giving the fans what they want or what they think the fans want, I think this that kind of bit them in the butt. The way they did it also with the lights out, you know, the lights go out, you're like, oh my God, we weren't expecting this. Who is it? You know, and then, like, the lights come on, it's like, who is this?
Yeah, really, who is it?
You know, so it was like a thing where so that also didn't help. I think there was a lot of things that went into it, you know, not working. You know, and then, you know, I was not I thought it was like a dud too. I think it was like the biggest dud since the literal dud at that pay-per-view where the bombs didn't go off. So I do think and it is a RH heavy storyline. And then the other caveat, bringing it back to the first part of the question, is also the fact that this all storylines in AEW have equal weight to them. This thing that's going on has equal weight to what's going on with Hangman Page, which has equal weight to what's going on with Jericho, which has equal weight to what's going on with Darby and Andrade, and the coffin matches are equal weight to the Thunder Rosa thing. So, I mean, that also kind of, like, doesn't help matters either.
Well, Javier, thank you for helping me get back into AEW, breaking down a lot of the happenings that have occurred on television since before WrestleMania season and before we had to take a bit of a hiatus from discussing AEW at length on this show. Go ahead and let the listeners, we're not there yet. We haven't
been
to, We haven't made it to the PW Torch's YouTube page yet. Check it out if you haven't. But, you know, Zach Haydorn, Tyler Sage, Wade Keller doing great work on that. But, see, it worked out because it was a free plug for the Torch, even though I misspoke. That's how you know you've been doing this for a long time, man, when you can misspeak and turn it into a plug. Tell the listeners when they can find your work on the Torch and how they can follow you on social media.
On social media, I'm at J Machado LK on Twitter. I never post anything, but if you follow me, I'll follow you back. I'm hoping to have the most number of followers without ever having tweeted out a thing. It's kind of like a little goal of mine without even really promoting it further than this. In general, you just catch me on the mostly almost once a week on the roundtables, de facto roundtable. I do with Wade at the end of all the post shows. I'm the last caller and, you know, wraps the stuff up with that. I'm usually there at least once a week. I try to avoid Zach Haydorn. No, I don't. I actually do like Zach Haydorn. It's a gimmick thing where I hate him. I'm usually doing the post shows. I got my own little jingle there too. So whatever that's worth. And also do the primers and stuff like that. Also, New Japan Pride podcast, I do that, but that's kind of been on hiatus because I'm so far behind on everything I'm supposed to watch. I will definitely be doing, because I think they announced that the G1 is going to be back in summer. I'll definitely be covering the G1 by the time that comes around. If I haven't caught up by then, I definitely will be doing the G1, because that's probably the most exciting time of wrestling for me. So
awesome. Well, Javier, thanks so much for joining me again tonight, and make sure if you're listening to check out all the stuff that Javier does for the Torch. Thanks, Javier.
Hey, thanks for having me as always, and happy Easter, everybody.
Yep, happy Easter, definitely. And we'll be back next week at our regularly scheduled time, Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. I'm Greg Parks. You can follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. So tune in next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.